the page and turn up the volume. The Morning Magazine is on. Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. Greenfield, Milwaukee.
Welcome back to Morning Magazine. It is 8:06. I'm Joel McNally.
And I'm Cassandra Cassandra.
We've been telling you we're going to be joined this hour by Sheriff David Clark. Discuss a program. Actually, we had some folks on this show about a week ago, Chief Judge Jeffrey Kremers, District Attorney John Chisholm, and some of the organizers of the Community Justice Resource Center, which has been operating for about 11 years in this community, providing alternatives, programming really for offenders, which include GED, job training, community service, behavior change, drug treatment, kinds of positive things that we hope can change the lives of some of the people who have offended. And this all became public when Sheriff David Clark publicly criticized the Community Justice Resource Center we'll let him say why. Since he has now taken over the entire operation of the House of Correction in addition to the jail, which he had run previously, that now means that he also, has under his control the programming at the House of Correction and some of these alternative programs. And he went public in the newspaper criticizing specifically this program. So we wanted to give him a chance to come in here and explain just exactly what his objections are to the Community Justice Resource Center. Welcome, Sheriff Clark.
Good morning. Good morning to your listeners.
Good morning, Sheriff.
Morning, Cassandra. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we did talk to the chief judge and the district attorney and some of the organizers from 11 years ago, which happened to include my wife, Kit McNally, from the Benedict Center, who originally organized this day reporting center, which is now called the Community Justice Resource Center. So tell us, as the person now with responsibility over all of these programs, what are your problems specifically with this program?
Well, first of all, I want to start out by calling attention to a, I don't know if you want to call it a blog or whatever that you authored.
Sure. I'm always glad to have attention called to that stuff.
There were some inaccuracies in it. I'm not going to let you off the hook when it comes to that.
And I'll answer you if I don't agree that there are inaccuracies.
At one point, you said over the years, the Day Reporting Center, now officially named the Community Justice Resource Center, has been strongly supported by two executives, including politically conservative Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you go back to his budget recommendation for 2009, so that's mm-hmm. the current year we're in, and mm-hmm. I'll read right from it. Okay, these are the facts. Scott Walker recommended that the funding for the Community Justice Resource Center is discontinued in 2009 with tax levy savings of $983,000. The CJRC was to have served as an alternative to incarceration by providing programming services at a community-based location operated by a private vendor with oversight by the House of Correction administrators. However, most inmates participating in the program have remained in custody. So...
Mm-hmm.
You know, for you to say that it's supported by
Scott Walker,
and you always bring out the politically conservative
yeah.
Scott Walker, is just factually inaccurate.
No, it's not, and I'll tell you why it's not. Scott Walker has supported that program right on this show. He has said that the recidivism rate is exemplary. He, in fact, supported it in every previous budget except this one, and... And you know what happened when he took it out of the budget, saying he had to cut the budget? And we asked him about it right on this show. I said, isn't it a fact that the real reason why you took that out of the budget is the county board is going to put it in. It's going to put it back in because it is a successful program. And you, in fact, yourself have supported this program. And he said, yes, I've supported the program, but that's not why I'm taking it out. But as a matter of fact, that's exactly what happened. The county board put it back in because it was a successful program. Scott Walker didn't have to take you know, credit for having it in there, but he got it in the budget because the county board put it in.
Well, here's the way I operate, and everybody's different, but let me tell you what angle I'm coming from.
Well, that's why we have you got here.
Talk is cheap.
That's why I want to hear what you have to say.
It's one thing to say I support something. Mm-hmm. This isn't, we didn't come here today to scrutinize his actions.
But you're the one that brought his actions up.
It's one thing to say I support something, and it's another thing to demonstrate it, prove it. That's why I say talk is cheap. I say prove it.
So you're saying the county executive's talk was cheap.
For someone to say I support something, but I'm not going to fund it, to me is meaningless. Okay.
That's your criticism of the county executive. But don't tell me that I'm wrong saying you supported it.
Well, there was another reason why you made mention of the fact that it was supported even by politically conservative Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you're not willing to fund it, then you don't support it. I don't care what you say.
Okay.
But anyway, as it relates to this program, I took control of the House of Correction on January 1 of 2009 this year. And I'm on record at the budget hearings last fall as saying this. All of the current inmate programming would remain in place until I had a chance to examine these programs one by one to determine whether or not they're working. I'm a results-oriented individual. Good intentions are not enough. It's not enough for people to just run around saying, oh, this is successful, oh, it's working, mm-hmm. because I would say show me the data to suggest that.
Okay.
I'm on record as saying I support inmate programming that has demonstrated and tangible results, not just someone walking around saying this is a highly successful program.
Okay.
I would say show me the data to suggest that, and okay. No one has done that.
You want me to show you something?
Far, okay.
Want me to show you something? Let me show you a report from the Office of the Sheriff, Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office. This is the data from the Community Justice Resource Center from 2009.
Okay.
2009. Let me read from this report.
Go ahead.
The level of programming that the CJRC has remained unchanged. While enrollments were down slightly in January due to the closing of CCC, the average daily population now remains constant at 110. The offender population at the Center for Deferred Prosecution Agreements will double in 2009. The district attorney is going to double the number of people he's putting in there. Rather than prosecute them, have deferred prosecution, put them in this program.
Okay.
He said, and then the report goes on, as one can see from the charts below, enrollments, the daily population, successful completion, and the recidivism rate has remained relatively unchanged. That's like from this goes back from 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, and 2009.
Right.
Then you turn to the next page. The rate of offenders who successfully complete the program remains constant at 65%. The recidivism rate is currently at 14%. Recidivism is defined as committing a like or more serious offense 1 year after release from the program. So a recidivism rate of 14% means only 14% of the people who completed the program committed a like or more serious offense 1 year later. That's a phenomenal recidivism rate, according to the chief judge, the district attorney, and everyone else who has looked at this program.
All right, first of all, I'd ask, when's the last time they checked? Those are the figures we were given by Jan Brilo, who is the head of my inmate programming.
Mm-hmm. These are your figures.
Not my figures. I just said those came from Jan Brilo.
This is from someone who works for you.
Remember, though, I took over January 1, and I've been there 6 months. And all I've asked for was a chance to examine these things thoroughly to determine whether or not they're working.
Okay.
Okay. So this report reflects the numbers we have been given. But I've looked inside the numbers because we've had a chance now to peel back the layers to find out, excuse me, whether or not these numbers reflect actual results, or are these just numbers that are picked out
these are your numbers.
I'm going to say it one more time.
Yeah.
Those are not my numbers.
Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office, dated June 26, 2009. Those are not your numbers?
I'm going to say it. I said I'm going to say it one more time, but for your benefit, because maybe I'm not coming through here.
You are.
I'm going to say it one more time. Those are not my numbers. Those are numbers given to us by Jan Brilo. But we've peeled these.
In your office.
We've peeled these layers back, and we've taken an in-depth look. And that's one of the problems I have with this program. It's the monitoring of it. You cannot call, and nobody does this. This isn't my opinion. The United States Department of Justice, Bureau of Statistics, for recidivism rates looks at 3 years. They take one individual and look 3 years back. In the first year, the recidivism rates are relatively low, 1 year. Nobody uses 1 year except this group here, because that's always going to be a low number, and it makes it look like this thing is working.
Let me ask you. If you use the formula
from the United States Department of Justice Bureau of Statistics, and that's a 3 year look back, and if you look at that same formula used by the Wisconsin Public Policy Research Institute, and a research
funded by the Bradley Foundation,
okay,
very conservative institution, yeah.
But the data, you can't make up the data.
Well, I don't know. They made up the bell curve when they funded that, but go ahead.
All right. But anyway, the three-year window is universally accepted as the formula to determine recidivism rates. That's not David Clark's opinion.
Let me ask you something.
And if you look at the three-year window for the individuals going through this program, in the second year, in fact, the recidivism rate goes up to 47%. And in the third year, it goes up to 55%.
How about
all right?
10 years
Nobody,
later?
See, you know what? It would be interesting to know 10 years later, but the problem is nobody's gathering this data and nobody's monitoring it. That is one of the problems that I have with this current program.
This is your report, the data that your office gathered. But let me ask you, even if I accept what you're saying, you say that this 14%, you know, success recidivism rate after 1 year is no big deal. What's the one-year recidivism rate for people who don't go through this program and are at the House of Correction? How you compare those numbers?
I don't know, because nobody keeps the data. That's the problem.
We do know that people who do not go through programming.
To determine whether or not data you want. A program is working. All I'm asking for here is for this program, and this comes from a recommendation from this same outfit, the Wisconsin
what
Policy
outfit?
Research Institute.
Funded by the Bradley Foundation.
That, who cares who funds it?
I think that's important.
Well, are you saying that the woman who did this?
I have no idea. I don't even know what you're going to tell me here.
Well, right. See, I
But I'm telling you, it's funded by a conservative, very conservative organization, that, and everyone in this community knows about that organization.
You know what? I don't even know if they're funded by a conservative. I don't really care who they're funded by. They did work on this thing. They took data, they crunched the numbers, and came up with figures.
What'd they find?
Okay, and then they made recommendations.
What'd they find?
They found that the recidivism rate in the State Department of Corrections is too high, and they made recommendations to the Department of Corrections for reform.
This is about probation and parole?
What I'm saying—
This is the probation and parole report?
Prison, probation, and parole.
Okay, I'm a little familiar with that report, actually. Okay,
a lot? Because I read this thing in its entirety, and it took me a while to do it.
You know what it recommends in there? Community programs, like the Community Justice Resource Center. That's what's recommended in there.
Right, as an
community
option. What did I say I'm on record as saying? It's saying those that work, that can demonstrate, keeping people from repeating criminal behavior. And in fact, it's saying that the way this thing is set up now, it cannot do that, and it is not doing that. That's what they're saying. So you'll have to argue with Kate Mize, okay? Don't
Actually,
argue with
that
me.
That report doesn't say that. That report recommends community programs
I'll tell you
just
what,
like this
Joel,
one.
Joel, I don't think you read it. I'm holding mine right in front of you, and as you can see, mine is highlighted because I read it, and I highlighted things that I may want to come back to. I don't know if you read it or not,
no,
but
I'm very well aware of what its recommendations are, and I hear it's a perfectly well-done report.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is the research that I refer to, because I don't do the studies. All right? I'm a cop.
But you're not even going to go by your own figures? You're not
going
to go by your own office's figures about the success of this program?
No, because those are not. Those are Ron Malone's figures, okay? Ron Malone, the same guy who I sat in this studio with that you defended in terms of whether or not I was going to keep him, in terms of talking about what a great job Ron Malone was doing, when in fact, according to the National Institute of Corrections,
remember this conversation.
Well, I got a little better memory than you do. All right.
So you fired Ron Malone. You took over the program. Now I'm trying to understand what your objection is to the program. I still haven't heard that.
The place was a train wreck, and he presided over that train wreck. Yet you were up here, like you're seeing with everything else here, it's working, it's successful. Yeah. You were up here telling your listeners what a great job this guy was doing, when in fact, He presided over a train wreck.
I did not take a position on Ron Malone.
I know that. We'll go back and check the tapes.
But okay. On the other side, we're talking to Sheriff David Clark, but we're trying to talk to him about his objections to a particular program that he says isn't working, even though the figures in his office say it is. On the other side,
another one of your factual inaccuracies.
We had the chief judge in Milwaukee County on this show.
Tell him the district attorney of Milwaukee County on this show. Say this thing is working. Time out.
Sheriff Joel. We've got to take a break.
Yeah, we are.
Inside the pages of the Morning Magazine, 821-799-1290 is the number to call if you want to get in this conversation. I didn't want to butt in, buddy. At some point, you know, a woman's got to step in here and break this manly stuff
there
up.
There you go.
You know, we'll be back with more of the Morning Magazine. 799-1290 is the number to call if you want to get this conversation right here on 1290 WMCS. The talk of the town.
Complete the program. They can avoid prosecution. We were arguing on the other side about success statistics. I was using a 14% recidivism rate, which is a remarkable rate that comes from some of the sheriff's department's figures, but he wants to use different statistics. We could argue statistics all day. Let's talk about the program a little bit. Let's talk about, you know, what, you know, providing drug treatment, providing community service, people, you know, who've offended, giving back somehow for their sins, providing education, allowing people to get GEDs. That kind of the reason, the whole rationale of these programs, and the chief judge and the district attorney made the point when they were in here, is to change people's behavior. We know that the folks who are sent to this program are sent by judges who are taking responsibility for their sentences, and they want to see them succeed, and they say, in fact, they have been very successful. So
Joel,
what's going wrong with this?
What
is it that you don't like about what's happening?
Just some of the language that you use, I think, is contributing to some of this program. You say the judges want them to succeed. We all want them to succeed, but good intentions aren't enough, number one.
Yeah.
And number
two, but a judge is elected. He takes responsibility.
Wait a minute. We can't want it more than the individual does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens too often because I want them to succeed too. But I can't want it more than they want to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
They have to want to. They have to make that individual choice. You say it allows people to get their GEDs. Who's prohibiting them in the first place from getting a GED? Who's prohibiting these individuals from getting a high school education at the time, you know, at the time that it's made available when they're of high school age?
Mm-hmm.
Who is making these individuals engage in this behavior and make questionable lifestyle choice? I want to know, when you say allows them to get a GED, what's stopping them before this program?
I don't know. I don't know
nothing.
What I don't
that's
know
who,
what in their life stopped them.
Nothing.
I don't know why
I'll
they dropped out
you.
Of high school.
I'll answer for you.
But we
it's
can
a
say they did.
Choice.
They dropped out of high school.
Choice.
They didn't
right.
get it.
And at any time,
wouldn't it
Joel,
be good if you get it
before
now?
Before they decide to engage in criminal behavior, which is not a socially acceptable reason for not having a GED, for not being able to find a job, for living in poverty, mm-hmm. and on and on and mm-hmm. on. There's a more socially acceptable way to deal with those tough situations in life.
Yeah.
One of the
I'll acknowledge that.
And we won't help these individuals because I truly want to help them. We will not help these individuals by finding excuses for them, by continuing to act in lenient ways, by not making them stand up on their own two feet and accept responsibility and accountability.
Isn't that what they're doing if they go to this program and get their GED? Isn't that what they're doing if they go through drug treatment? Isn't that what they're doing when they go through this program?
No, because you know what? We don't even know. They're getting started. Nobody even keeps the records as to once they get out of this program, because you don't get your GED in this program. It gets you started. Okay?
Okay.
For many
good.
Of these individuals.
Let's
no
get
one
them started.
Keeps records. No one keeps records as to once they leave and because don't forget, this is short-term confinement. All right, so let's say they're in there 6 months, 9 months, 90 days, whatever, and they go on and they're released. Mm-hmm. No one mm-hmm. knows if they actually follow through and carry through and go on and get their GED and go on. In this day and age, you're going to need some sort of undergrad, some sort of college work to compete for the jobs of the 21st century.
We agree.
I have a question.
Why not get them started?
I have a question.
What do you mean, why not get them started?
Let me ask you.
They have to do this on their own. Why do they have to get arrested and charged with a felony
Sheriff?
Before we put them into a program.
Sheriff?
That's not a requirement to get a GED. Yes, ma'am.
Sheriff? I agree with you that people shouldn't have to get arrested in order to get a GED. However it happens, sometimes stuff happens. And I would like to know, for my own benefit, what your feelings are about when a person makes mistakes. People make mistakes.
We all do.
And all of us.
And
sometimes, you know, dumb mistakes, real stupid stuff that they probably should have known better. And you look at that person when they're in the courtroom or when they've gotten arrested, and you think, you know, idiot, why did you do that? Why didn't you know better? Okay. But at some point they fess up and they say, you know what, I was real stupid. I made a mistake. And I really would like to get myself together again. There seems to be some programs out here now that judges are beginning to work with people in the community to help them redeem themselves after they've made some real dumb mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know, with a program like this that can help a person recover after they've done that, what your feeling is about the program, if in fact it can help an individual get themselves back together again after they've just really just done it and just screwed up, so to speak.
Okay, and what I'm proposing here, to answer your question, are some improvements in this thing. I think this thing can work. I want it to work. My standards are going to be higher, number one. But number two, it's going to have to demonstrate results. So we're going to have to do a better job of monitoring the thing as it goes along. We've always been in America's second chance society. But for a lot of these individuals, we're not talking about a second chance. Okay, I got examples here, and these aren't anomalies. This is unfortunate. And I think, and this stuff angers me, that our young men of color, and in some cases women too, are not making better lifestyle choices.
Okay.
That bothers me.
Okay.
However,
okay,
a second chance is fine. But what we need for this program, it's one of my recommendations, and I actually have a plan to reform it, not to eliminate it. And that's one of the things that I think that is erroneously being portrayed by Joel over here. We have to have a screening tool to decide who's going to be a good fit for the program, because it's not going to work with everyone. It's
okay.
Just not.
Is that the judge's decision, though, as to who he or she decides it works for and not work? I mean, because sometimes, I mean, you know, when you look at it in the background of a person's life, you know, hence a young lady that's incarcerated this morning for stabbing, you know, a stepdad, and she's 13 years old, and there's talk about this young woman possibly going to adult court. All the facts have to be looked at in all these situations.
And some of them are horrendous.
Of course they are. But in some cases, if I'm a judge and I'm sitting here and I see this repeat offender, let's just say it's a repeat offender, every time you turn around, this kid's in trouble. I see you in my courtroom all the time. But I've had an opportunity to maybe look at some history and say, you know what? Maybe this kid wasn't given a fair shake on the front end. Mom was out of order, dad was out of order, in prison, whatever. And so I tell you what, even though you've been here like umpteen times, I'm going to give you another shake, and I'm going to put you in this program, and this time you better do it, okay? So isn't that the judge's decision to make in terms of who goes in the program, or is that your decision who goes in that program?
Judges are not in a position from the bench in a very short period of time to make those kind of assessments.
Help me understand. Help me understand why not.
That's what it's turned into, which is why I'm advocating for a screening tool where we actually have clinical psychologists and psychiatrists, among others, that come in and do a professional. This is what they're trained to do.
There are background judges? Checks for people that
I'm not talking
before
about
the
a
judge.
Background check, Joel.
Well, I'm talking okay. to some pretty
talking,
in-depth,
and I,
you know,
if you're
they
suggesting
get some pretty
that we
in-depth
have research
reports.
Psychologists and psychiatrists that are setting up treatment programs. Well, again, that's misinformation. It's not true.
No, it's not. There have been such treatment programs.
I think that should be added to this program. So, again, I'm here to reform this thing. You're advocating for the status quo. This thing is underperforming.
I'm actually advocating for expansion.
Get back, Cassandra.
We got to take a break. Hold your thought. We can get back to that. Just so we can understand where we're at, if we're trying to just kill the program or if, in fact, what you're saying is you're trying to make some tweaks to it. Tweaks are okay. So let's talk about that. On the other side, inside the pages of the Morning Magazine, 837-799-1290 is the number to call if you want to get in our conversation after this.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Back to the Morning Magazine with Cassandra and Joel McNally. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
And we're back inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. Time now, 8:42. I am Cassandra.
And I'm Joel McNally.
In the studio with us is Sheriff David Clark as we talk about the Day Reporting Center with its new name,
Community Justice Resource Center.
Community Justice Resource Center. And on the other side, Sheriff Clark, what we're trying to kind of get to the bottom of you know, obviously there's been some talk about, you know, and you allegations that you want to kill the program. And I think what, at least from my perspective, what I'm trying to get to is what your real thoughts are about the program and you know, how do you bring, you know, both sides together and make it work without totally killing it? You were about to make a point as it related to, you know.
How do we screen and assess and who's in a better position to do that? When this thing first started back in 1998, the agreement and the rules were that it was to accomplish three things. The main one being jail overcrowding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then it was going to try to reduce recidivism and reducing the failure to appear rate. All right, people out on bail or whatever,
sure.
We let them out on electronic monitoring and they don't show up for court.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Those were the three objectives. The eligibility requirements were that the offenders who have been charged or convicted or in this program had to be charged or convicted with a nonviolent, non-assaultive crime.
Gotcha.
The sheriff's office in 1998, I wasn't the sheriff, would go through their jail population and find what they subjectively thought, and was subjective, would be good fits for this 125 slots.
Mm-hmm.
People who had a good chance of succeeding and then moving on, and then we'd go to the next 125, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not suggesting we were in the best position because we're not clinical psychologists and psychiatrists, but Joel had mentioned background checks. We did what, at the time, they did what, you know, the best they had in terms of,
sure.
of making this assessment. But the sheriff would go to the courts and say, Judge, we think these individuals here would be a good fit. Right now they're sitting on $10,000 bail. They're low risk enough to put them on electronic monitoring, maybe home detention. Mm-hmm. So we're managing the population, relieving overcrowding, and they would participate in this program.
Mm-hmm.
This thing morphed on its own into a sentencing tool by the judges where we can't make the recommendations because the program's full.
Now, the judges
are making a determination.
But what's wrong
sentencing.
With it? Help me understand, just for the sake of moving time along, help me understand what's wrong with the judge making that decision.
The judge is in a position to do that. The judge is not doing any extensive background on this individual to find out what the needs of this individual really
How
are.
It might not be
GED. It might not be some of these other things. It might be something else.
But how come
the judge is there to administer the law? I don't even want us to do it anymore. I want a research psychologist to make these determinations based on their professional training. That's
so you're actually, because help me understand this. I was under the impression, and maybe it's only because I've only seen a real serious criminal case where the individuals would not qualify for this type of a program, where more extensive information was sought about those individuals' backgrounds, whether or not they went to school and what kind of students they were, that kind of thing. Are you saying that judges don't have any of this information when they begin to, especially if it's a juvenile or anybody, you know, they don't have any of that information at all? Is that what you're saying?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But that's not true. You're saying it, but it's not true.
At a sentencing hearing, there is no way that this determination can be made. The judge
they have the information, the way this started.
But Joel, it started this way, and it was okay when it started that way. Nobody had any objections to the judge just issuing the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm sentencing you to 120 days at the HOC down in Franklin. Then we would go through to manage the population and say we think this individual is a good fit based on our
sure.
Okay, but judges make those determinations all
You'd
the time.
Be surprised,
they can put somebody
Joel,
on probation.
Times?
They can decide not to have them under control at all
right.
based on the background information which they have. They have
You'd
a lot of
surprised.
Background information.
You'd be surprised the number of judges that I've called on a particular sentence they handed out just to get some more information as to what their thinking was. And they said to me, I didn't have that information at the time. You don't understand. I have a busy calendar, and I have to go through these cases. This is actual language from judges. I'm not going to name them on the air here. But
no,
if
you're
someone
not.
Forces
but,
me to, I will, to show that I'm not making
but,
this up.
But in fact,
that
judges
to me
take responsibility
is,
all the time
is
for their
indicative.
Sentences. They take responsibility for every sentence they hand out because they're up for election. They know if those people go crazy
When's the last
and
time
do,
one
and
of those ran?
Well, hang
When's
on.
The last time one of those ran? With an opponent.
Let's talk about facts.
Doesn't
here. Let's,
happen.
Hang on. Let's stick with the facts and let's stick with the program itself because, you know, again, you've got some people who may not be as astute about this as you are. And Joel, I am trying to understand, okay? And I think it's scary to think that when a judge is sentencing an individual that they don't have a little more general information other than the crime that they committed. About that individual. Of course, they may, especially on some of these misdemeanor or whatever type of crimes they are, where they're not lethal kinds of crimes where someone was murdered. But I'm still trying to understand your position. You're saying you need more professionals involved here that can help oversee this program and monitor.
Right.
So am I, to shorten this up, am I understanding that maybe you want some more money pumped into it so you can pay these extra professionals to come in? I mean, that's what it's going to take, right? It's going to take some more money, right?
Well, I'm not one of those that wants to jump quickly to that. At first,
well,
I
know
want to
you
come up with a framework.
I know,
I can, this
I
current,
know you like to save money, Sheriff, but if you want to bring in more professionals, we need some more money, though, right?
Maybe.
Okay. Or is there money sitting
because,
someplace else that could,
well,
could
here's,
be?
Well, here's the funding issue, and I'm glad you brought this up, because
okay.
the funding issue, and it speaks to something Joel said earlier, is one of the main problems I have with it. Originally, this started out state-funded. The state funded this program with a grant.
A very small grant, because it was a very small program
Joel,
when it started.
Joel, it was $750,000. All right? It's now up to, probably because of the rate of inflation, it cost $983,000 to fund this thing.
Mm-hmm.
The state funded it all. Now, you can talk about very small. Well, to me, $750,000 is not chump change.
I'm telling you. When
but anyway.
I was there at the beginning,
was,
and when it started at the very beginning, there was a small grant.
Okay. No, they funded the whole darn thing, 125 people. We still only fund for 125 people. With the rate of inflation, costs are going to go up. But anyway, if this is such a successful program, and this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, why did the state pull the funding?
Do you not want any programming?
Did you ever?
Is that it? I mean, don't you think that job training and drug treatment and GED and community service, don't you think? I mean, the thing it is, you tried to claim that there was some, you know, the recidivism rate wasn't as terrific as it looks like. But the point is, if someone goes through the House of Correction with no programming, with no drug treatment, with no job training, with no educational program, with no community service, And every professional has said this, the recidivism rate is a lot higher. Doesn't it save you money in the long run for these people not to recidivate?
It's not saving us any money right now.
Of course it is.
It isn't saving us any money.
Anyone who succeeds in this program saves you money.
What prevents someone who, because there's only room for 125 people. I didn't set that number. That's the funding number. That's how much the county board has said we're going to fund. You know how many people I have in custody? Over 3,000.
So you don't want them to have
so
any
I
programming?
I didn't say that.
If you can help 125 people succeed, don't you want to do that?
That is another false assertion that you're making about what I feel about.
I'm trying to understand why you don't want job training.
That's why I'm reading
GED,
from the record. I'm on record before the county board at the budget hearing last year, I'm on record. They record those things. Go back and check the record. I'm also on record in an op-ed piece that I did that was submitted to the Journal Sentinel. So I'm on record for it. I can't hide from it. And I say right here, in it, in part, society should always be willing to try programs that have merit based on empirical research and evidence, not those that are only well-intentioned. If it's determined that a program doesn't work, it should be trashed, not repackaged with additional funding.
And if you have professionals like the chief judge of Milwaukee County, the district attorney, saying this is a successful program, why aren't you supporting it?
I have a plan to reform this thing, but let's get back to the funding issue. The state of Wisconsin dropped the funding for this thing, and now it goes on the property tax levy, an ever-strained property tax levy. You know the county situation, correct?
Sure.
If this is such a great thing, why did the state pull the funding? And did you go after the state when they made that decision? No. But when David Clark talks about reform, all of a sudden it's a bad thing. No, I want stuff that works.
I just understand why you're not supporting it. That's what I'm trying to understand. Because it's to everyone else who looks at this program, including, like I say, the chief judge of Milwaukee County, the district attorney, they're putting their reputations behind it.
Because if I give it the benefit of the doubt, it's underperforming. I have a plan to reform this thing. And it starts with getting the state of Wisconsin to fully fund this program. The state of Wisconsin. Why the state? Because corrections and inmate supervision is the ultimate responsibility of state government, not local property taxpayers. We need money for a screening tool to the tune of $1.3 million. Should we tack that onto the property tax levy? No.
We've got to get money wherever we can get it to do these things to help people succeed.
And maybe even the feds might have a dog in that fight. Yeah. Point two is to return eligibility requirements to the program's original design.
Let's finish on the other side.
We have to finish on the other side.
Let's finish on the other side. Have you got some time to stay on the other side,
yes,
Sheriff Clark?
Certainly.
Okay. Inside the pages of the Morning Magazine, 853-799-1290 is the number to call if you want to get in our conversation.
Welcome back to Morning Magazine. It is 9:03. I'm Joel McNally.
And I'm Cassandra Cassandra.
In the studio with us is Sheriff David Clark. We've been talking about the Community Justice Resource Center, which is the latest title for a program that started about 11 years ago, called the Day Reporting Center in Milwaukee County, to have some alternative programming for people who are offenders who've been arrested, sentenced, in some case pre-sentence or pre-prosecution even. The district attorney refers some people before they're prosecuted to the program, saying if you complete this program, you might be able to avoid prosecution successfully complete the program. Other judges sentence people directly to the program. We've been talking quite a bit about the success or not success of this program. The one thing I want to ask you, Sheriff Clark, and by the way, he mentioned that I'd written a column on this, which I have, and if you sign onto the 1290 WMCS, our new interactive webpage now, 1290WMCS.com. You can go directly to that column. There's actually an icon on the page, which will allow you to click on my head and go there and read what we're talking about there.
It's great fiction.
It's a program that obviously, and you know why, Sheriff, that I do care about, because my wife was involved in starting the program 11 years ago. And I remember the night that it started, because it was a horrible night for us, because I described it before, we were victims of a crime that night. It was a great grand opening for this program, and we were higher, you know, about that. But then a horrible incident happened to us that night, a criminal incident. The truth of the matter is, that's why I care, and my wife cares, and other people who are behind this program care about people succeeding in the criminal justice system, not just coming out worse than they went in, maybe changing their lives. The people involved in the House of Correction, let's make it clear, the people at the House of Correction, if you're arrested for some horrendous crime, you're not in the House of Correction. You are in state prison.
That's not true, Joel. That is simply not true.
But let me ask you to describe who is there, because here's my understanding of who's there. There are people there who are serving a year or less for felonies or misdemeanors. There are people there who haven't been convicted of anything. They're pretrial. And there are people there for violation of probation, not necessarily new crimes, but violating their probation one way or another, and they might be held there. Is that who's there? And who's in this program? Describe who really does get referred to this program.
All right. First of all, I think the difference between you and I, you want people to succeed.
Yeah, I do.
In the criminal justice system. I want people to succeed before they even enter into the criminal
justice.
I
want that, too.
I don't even want them to get there.
Sure.
And the ordeal that you and your wife went through, and I can only imagine, okay, I've never had a gun held to my head, but I can only, and that's why I won't pretend, but I can only imagine, and it's no joking matter. Was an arrest made in that incident?
No.
Okay, so that's an unsolved crime. I'd be willing to bet, and I don't have any data to suggest this, but I'd be willing to bet that those individuals went on to commit other crimes and probably were eventually caught. And maybe if our criminal justice system instilled more accountability and wasn't as lenient as I believe that it is, those individuals wouldn't have been out at that time to go on and not only to victimize you and your wife, but others after that as well. So, you know, I want to get on the front end of this thing. I don't want people to thrive in the criminal justice system. That's no place to be.
We want to get them out.
Getting in. Well, one way you prevent them from getting in is sending a stronger message than we are about criminal activity. Because when an individual is arrested over and over and over again, and that's what one of the goals of this thing was, is to reduce recidivism. Mm-hmm. You know, we call it revolving door justice. And that's how the criminal element thinks and feels. You know, eventually I might have to do a little stint, but I'll get out again. And it goes over and over and over again. Instead of sending a different message that says, hey, look, game time is over. You get caught up in this thing, and there's going to be sanctions and consequences. Consequences, to me, are not putting people on probation. Okay, there is an appropriate, that's an appropriate tool.
Mm-hmm.
But not for everybody.
That's right.
Okay.
And these programs are not for everybody. They're for people that the judges think could succeed, maybe change their life, maybe not reoffend again.
Based on what? We got five people currently in this program that have been convicted, which is why when you said low-level crimes and misdemeanors, convicted of armed robbery. The same thing that you and your wife went through.
Yeah,
but that's a 40-year felony in the state of Wisconsin.
They're convicted, and they're at the House of Correction.
You know why they're at the house?
Why are they at the house?
Because the judge sentenced one particular individual. Because I look at this stuff. Okay, I eat, breathe, and sleep this mm-hmm. stuff, and combing over it and over it to try to find some parallels and some things.
So why are they not in state prison at the house?
Because the judge originally sentenced this one individual to 6 years in the Wisconsin State Prison. But he stayed the sentence in lieu of 3 years of probation and maybe 9 months at the facility down in Franklin.
Okay, and
but
why?
He originally sentenced him. He said 6 years in state prison. Why? Because they're too lenient. That's why.
I don't know that.
Well, you know what?
There's something about the background of this individual, even though he was somehow involved.
Well, then why
he may not have been the main
sentence. Then?
The judge would have to explain that. Wouldn't he? Yep. But I can't say he was wrong. I can't say he was wrong based on no evidence.
Not a right
and
or
I don't
wrong
know
situation.
Why you're saying he's
you're,
wrong.
You're trying to convince people that everybody down in Franklin at the correctional facility south.
No, I'm not trying to convince
is
that
down
all.
There for pretrial. First of all, the pretrial at the
but
the
if they if this individual was put
facility,
into this
central,
program,
more,
first of all,
more
this,
commonly
this
known as
program.
The county jail downtown.
This is a program of it's treatment. Post,
hang on, both of you can't talk at the same time.
Right.
Hold on.
Program of treatment. Education, community service. If this person was sentenced to this program, that judge says, you know, you could go to prison for 6 years, but I'm going to put you at the House of Correction and I'm going to put you in this program. There must have been a reason for that.
Because there is a reason. I'm going to give it to you again because our judicial system here in Milwaukee County is too lenient. That's the reason.
Let me ask this question, Chair Clark. We see plenty of people that have gone to prison for, you know, all kinds of crimes for, you know, extended periods of time. And what we're finding is that our prisons are overcrowded and that, you know, and people are being returned back into the system, back into the communities that really could use some help getting their lives back together again. And I'm going to go back to my original question because it doesn't sound like what I'm hearing, but I don't want to assume. It sounds like you're saying, get your life together on the front end. Don't wind up in my system because I don't have any compassion for you once you blow it and wind up in this system. And that's kind of what it sounds like you're saying. Well, I would like for you maybe to explain that because Don't get me wrong. I am a firm believer in people following the letter of the law. And I am a firm believer in people being penalized when they break the law. I got some tickets the other day that just kind of quirked the heck out of me when the police officer pulled me over. And, you know, I just sat there and looked at him, and he was going on and on and on. But I couldn't say nothing because I was a little out of order. And what can I say? I just have to deal with it. Dog bite it. But the bottom line is at what point do we work with, and we know we have this problem. You've seen the report, Sheriff Clark, all over this country, particularly in communities of color and poor communities, that we have serious problems all over this country where we need to get people back up and running and getting them back in our communities where they can get themselves together as substantial citizens. My question to you is, what problem do you have, if at all, with these programs that help to do that? And what problem do you have with this program? Now, you began to tell me that there needs to be some more professionals involved in this program, which sounds like some more money needs to be pumped into this program. You seem to have some issues with the judges sentencing these people, which means that you have issue with their judgment. So help me understand your position about the program itself, and are you calling for it to be eliminated, or are you calling for this program to be tweaked again?
Okay, first of all, when it comes to me, there is no gray area. I'm on the side of victims of crime. I'm on the side of law-abiding citizens. That's the oath I took, to perform. That's mm-hmm. the duty.
And so did the judges, and so did the district attorney.
Okay, but they perform a different role mm-hmm. than I do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Just so that's clear. Now, as it relates to overcrowded prisons, and yes, they are. All right. The jail downtown is overcrowded. The facility out in Franklin is overcrowded as well. But again, we're putting too much of our effort and energy on the back end of this thing. We have to stop the source of the people coming into the criminal justice system.
I agree.
And I'd rather have...
I agree, but I don't see that we're putting all that much on the back end either, to tell you the truth,
well,
to help people.
You know what?
We have people coming back.
You know, I want you to finish your answer, yeah. Because I'm still, not understanding your position, Sheriff Clark, of where you're trying to go with this. Just explain that to us, okay?
All right. I'm going to go through quickly, just read right down the list. There's only 6 points to my reform of the CJRC.
Sure.
Reform. I'm talking about reform. I am not talking about tweaking.
Elimination.
I'm not talking about tweaking.
Well, tweak is reform. I mean, you're making, that sounds like making some adjustments. So, so you're saying it needs adjusting, correct?
There's a difference between tweak and gutting, too. So which is it?
Well, you're right, because the stuff that's not working, you're darn right.
Okay, go ahead with your 6 points.
All right, getting the state to fully fund the program. Number two, return eligibility requirements to the program's original design, which I read through earlier with nonviolent, low-level offenders.
Sure,
that's
sure.
what the. That's not because I want it. That's how the program was originally
sure,
designed. Number three, privatize most of community corrections. Number
Whoa,
four.
Go ahead. Go on.
Number four, setting clear and precise benchmarks supported by evidence-based research to gauge effectiveness in the overall goal of reducing recidivism, managing the inmate population, which is jail overcrowding, and protecting the public. And number five, establish a screening tool for accurate assessment of offender needs. That's the part where I said everybody's not a good fit.
Okay.
Just
okay.
because someone's subjective, well, I think this guy might be able to. We don't have enough dollars for
sure.
that. We got a hit on the people that, we put in this program. And number six, the last one, a more comprehensive system of monitoring is needed to collect data and hold providers, and that would be the privatization part, accountable for outcomes and determine if the money was well spent.
Now,
currently not in place.
Now, let me ask you. Privatization? So somebody can make some money off of it? Help me understand that, Sheriff Clark, because, it just sounds like, privatization of prisons, I think, is just absurd. Now, that's my personal opinion.
Mine, too.
but what are you talking about, privatization? Are you want to make money off the backs of these people? or you want to see somebody else? No, I'm saying privatization. Are you want to sell it so that somebody else can make money off the backs of these people? Everybody that comes through that system would wind up in there if that's the case. Okay. I mean, okay. I don't have a problem with finding more funds. But if I'm wrong, please correct me. I don't want to.
People can make profits. What's the incentive to change these people's lives?
I don't think you're listening, Joel.
We're trying to understand.
Because with these 6 points in place, mm-hmm. it will prevent that from happening. You are right, and Cassandra, you are right. If not monitored, this becomes a cottage industry.
Sure. Okay.
There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
But if you put, and I'll quickly read this last one again. A more comprehensive system of monitoring is needed to collect data and hold providers accountable for outcomes.
Sure.
Okay, outcomes, sure. Not people coming back in
totally,
and going back
totally
up.
Agreed. Totally agreed. I give it a given. If you want a monitoring system, mm-hmm. that's a given because we need to be able to come back 5 years from now when we want to increase it from 150 or 125 to 250. We need some type mm-hmm. of data to be able to show here's what happened, and here's some of them people that the program benefited. But I have to understand, when you talk about privatization of these programs, what are you talking about and why? Because
private nonprofits and private not-for-profits
why?
Running these programs.
Why?
Well, two reasons.
Okay.
One, they get it done at a lower cost. And number two, you have more accountability.
Why?
Because it creates competition.
for
results. If you don't, you get paid based on the results. So we don't give you $500,000 and say, go to work. The way this thing is set up in some situations, they might get a $500,000 grant, but you spoon feed it. You give them $125,000 to get started, and then maybe 6 months, a year goes by, you give them a little more based on outcomes. And if they're not showing it, you stop. So they may only collect $125 of that, and then you go, you know what?
This isn't working. Sheriff Clark, that scares me.
You know what scares me worse?
Yeah, what?
Is being done in the current fashion that we're doing because there's no accountability for failure. When you fail, you don't get the money pulled, and you don't go out of business. You just keep, government just keeps marching on.
Yeah, but it's scary when you think about we've got some real serious issues with that privatization of prison-type programs because we've already seen examples of some judges, to say the least, that were railroading some children into some programs, and no one would have believed that the judges would have done that.
They got kickbacks.
Let's go to the phone lines. And unfortunately, sir, Clark, when you start talking about privatization, oftentimes that's what comes out of the woodwork is the unscrupulous. 919. Let's go to the phone lines. Ms. Rose, you've been waiting for a while. Good morning.
First, I want to say welcome back. When I didn't see you in Juneteenth, I found out that it was your health problems. I'm glad your health is back to norm and things.
Thanks, ma'am. I appreciate that.
Oh, by the way, before I ask my question, I happened to see you on TV yesterday, and I thought you had a very positive new look. And plus, some might even say sexy. That might be why your wife wants you to get rid of it. Now, you stated earlier something about this the recidivism rate is the basis for your whole thought process on redoing everything on the third year. 45% to the second year 45% approximately, and to the third year 55%. And the thing is, I attended a meeting once with a group of persons who were former indicted and everything. And when you say the recidivism was based on minor, extremely minor, but earlier I heard you say that recidivism should be based on extreme offenses that really relate to something that worthwhile putting back person in the back.
Right.
But a lot of these recidivism have been based on very minor, extremely minor things like being late for a meeting with the PO and all the little stupid things like that. So when you take all of those things into consideration, that recidivism rate for maybe the second or third year might be 50% cut down. Well, then under those, the 50% left, which would be about 20-something percent versus 30-something percent the third year, then you look and say, what has happened when they get out into the community? What is there for them to do to occupy their time? What type of jobs are given them, or what type of education? See, the thing is, if they had such minor offenses when they went in. Many times it's because they don't have the education or jobs, and even though they screwed up in the beginning, this is where they have a chance for a second chance to not to screw up, and indirectly you're doing it before they get to the point of doing it again. Because when you start reinventing the wheel, then that's extra money and time that's going to be lost that could be when you could just, as Cassandra stated, tweaking the program and taking those areas that are good and getting rid of those areas that are bad. Because I took a workshop on restorative justice, and I would like to see a lot of these things happen before they go in as well. But the only time you have to do that is just when the police are arresting them before they're sentenced, and let them deal with that arena. And restorative justice arena and groups, why couldn't they get the so-called money that you're talking about privatized? So I think when you look at the whole picture, I applaud you for the micromanaging that you had to do in the beginning, because you have to find out where the problems are. You have to take into consideration all these different factors. So,
before, right.
So I just want you to your thought process and my thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Rose. And Sheriff, on the other side, inside the pages of the Morning Magazine, 921-799-1290 is a number to call to get in the conversation with Sheriff David Clark as we talk about the community day program.
It's got a day new, reporting program. Community new, Justice Resource Center.
It's got a new name. Inside, and it might have even a new name if somebody buys it. Inside the pages of the Morning Magazine.
Naming rights.
That's right. We'll be back after this from 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.